Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shurim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We're now in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Yod Chet Amud Aleph, about to begin our study of the second parak. The second parak, which deals with two unique and important personages in the society and how their position plays out in issues of court. One of them is the Kohen Gadol, one of them is the Melech. It's really two Mishnayot that we have here, and as I indicated in the handout, we will deal in this shiur with the Melech and only study Mishnah Aleph. Skip Mishnah Bet, we'll go back to it when it becomes appropriate in the Gemara and when it is analyzed there. So Mishnah Aleph. Kohen Gadol dan v'daninoto. A Kohen Gadol himself can be a judge and can also be judged. Me'id u'me'idinoto. He can testify and people can testify regarding him. Choleitz v'choltzin li'ishto. He could give chalitza, meaning if his brother, a Kohen Hedyot, died without children, he can give chalitza. And choltzin li'ishto, if his wife died, then... if he died, then his wife gets chalitza from one of the brothers. Umiyabmin et ishto, and if he died, one of his brothers can do yibum on his wife, who is an almanah, muteret lekohen hedyot. Avalu eino miyabem, but he cannot do yibum on one of his brother's wives, because, of course, she's an almanah. Avneshu asur ba'almanah. Good. Mate lo mate. Now, a unique halacha of the Kohen Gadol that we read about in Parshat Emor is that unlike a Kohen Hedyot, he is not metame for anyone. So if one of his relatives dies, eino yotze achar mitai, does not follow the bier to the funeral. Ela hein nichsin v'hu nigla, hein niglin v'hu nichseh. He is sort of discreet, and the party and the group leading the bier out is the Hendixin. They are discreet, and he appears, and then they are revealed, and he disappears, sort of plays a little cat and mouse, as it were. Seiman on Petach Sharai Yirin, but he goes with them until the gate of the city, because they're going to, of course, bury outside of the city. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. It says, Mikdash. He does not leave the Mikdash at all. Shemin Shinamar Minakdash, let's say, the Pasuk says he should not leave the Mikdash. Now let's move further. When the Kohen Gadol is playing the role of Nichum Avelim, Derech Kol Am Ovrin B'Zeh Achar Zeh, everyone else passes one after another in front of the Avel. V'amuneh Matzo Beino L'Vein Am. But his Mamuneh, his sort of assistant, puts him in between the Avel and the rest of the people. Uchshum Mitnachem Me'Acherim. When the Kohen Gadol does have someone die, although he doesn't go to the funeral, he is an avel and he accepts nechama. Kol ha'am omrim lo anuka kaparatcha. They say, we are your kapara. Umer lahen titbarchu min hashamayim, and he gives them this beautiful bracha. K'shamavrin oto kol ha'am mesubin al aretz v'umay sev ala safsal. Unlike a regular avel, when they bring him his first meal after someone died, they sit low and he sits up on a bench higher than them nonetheless. Okay, the Gemara then analyzes the pieces of the Mishnah. Kohen Gadol dan. So the Kohen Gadol judges. So Pshita, why shouldn't he be able to judge? The answer is danino toitzterichale. We only needed the statement that a Kohen Gadol can be a dayan to also produce the inverse, which is he can be subject to judgment. So hanai pshita le, that's also obvious. Ilo danino le, you eichi dayan. How could he possibly be judged if we're not going to judge him? In other words, how could he possibly be a judge if he can't be judged, right? After all, v'haktiv, hitkoshishu v'koshu, this pasuk in Tzfanya, which is the famous Rasha of Shlakish, hasheit atzmacha v'acharkach hasheit achirim, first adorn yourself, then adorn others. So if he is not subject to being judged, he cannot be in a position to judge others. So it should be obvious that if he is a judge, which we said should be obvious that he could be a judge, then obviously he should be someone who could be judged. The entire thing is parallel construction. In Mishnah Bet, which we'll get to later, it says a king is neither judged nor can be judged. Therefore, Tananami Kohen Gadol Dan V'Danin. So therefore, Kohen Gadol, we wanted to mention sort of the parallel statement in the affirmative. He is a judge and he is judged. That's possibility one. If you bite a ma kamashlan, or could be teaching the following in Tanya. Kohen Gadol sharagat nefesh b'mezid neharag. If a Kohen Gadol deliberately kills somebody, first what we would call first degree murder, neharag, then he is executed. B'shogeg, if he kills somebody inadvertently, golat, he goes to galut, as we'll study in the second parak of Makot. Ve'over alaseh ve'al lo taseh, whatever this may mean, we'll take a look at it in a moment. He violates aseh and lo taseh. V'areo kedyot l'chol dvarav, and he is like a regular citizen in all cases. So what does that mean? Let's take it apart. B'mezid neherag, a kohen gadol, if he kills intentionally, is executed, sapshita. It's obvious. The answer is v'shogeg golayt z'trichle. We needed the second clause to say that he goes into galut if he killed inadvertently. So anani pshita, that's also obvious. The answer is tzarek sakot adachamein ha'olti v'yashav adumai tochet moira kohen gadol. Since the ir miklat, the rule of ir miklat is the person who is exiled stays there until the death of the kohen gadol. So ema kol de'id le'takonta b'chazara legally. Maybe only someone who can achieve the rehabilitation through the death of the Kohen Gadol and subsequently live, goes in exile. To lay the Tekon to Machazar, but somebody who could never be released, because of course if he's the Kohen Gadol, the only time he's released is when he dies, and therefore he can never return to regular society, lo legally, maybe he doesn't go into exile. Did not, as we see, ha'reg Kohen Gadol, o Kohen Gadol, sharagat ha'nefesh, if someone kills a Kohen Gadol, or a Kohen Gadol himself kills somebody, but by accident. Einor etzem yisham le'olam. If it's the person who killed the Kohen Gadol, will never leaves the city. Because it would have to be with the death of the Kohen Gadol, who was Kohen Gadol at the time he killed, and he's not around anymore to die. So, and if the Kohen Gadol himself goes into exile, he can never leave because it's only with his death that he's released. So, amalo legally, maybe therefore he can never go into exile. In other words, maybe exile is dependent on the ability to be released from the exile. So Kamash Balan, that nonetheless Kohen Gadol goes into exile, and that's the reason that we said Daninoto, in other words, the idea is Daninoto, even in cases of Shogeg, because he will go into Ir Miklat, and therefore Daninoto is necessary, and therefore Dan becomes the parallel. Ve'imachinami, so why don't we indeed say that a Kohen Gadol doesn't go into exile because he can never be released? The answer is Amar Kral, Anu Shama Kol Rotzeach. If you recall, the Parsha of Arei Miklat appears in a brief mention in Parshat Mishpatim, in a much larger piece in Parshat Mas'eh and in Parshat Shoftim. And in Parshat Shoftim, the statement is Lanus Shama Kol Rotzeach. It's also mentioned in Vatranan, where Moshe says the three cities on the east bank. Lanus Shama Kol Rotzeach. Anybody who kills inadvertently goes to the Ir Miklat. The truth is, anybody who kills goes to the Ir Miklat, and then they're taken a judgment to see whether or not it would determine whether or not they stay there, or they're executed or set free. So that means everybody who kills, regardless of who you are, even a Kohen Gadol, who is sort of inherently unable to be fully part of the Parsha because he cannot be liberated at the death of the Kohen Gadol because that's who he is.
Okay, the rest of the Braita said something very strange. Over ala se ve'al lo tase. So, logul sagit of avar, what does that mean? He has to violate mitzvot? Well, that's a bizarre thing. Hachi kamar, im avar ala se ve'al lo tase, okay, do the chod avarav. So we modify the language of the Braita. Not, it doesn't mean that he does or should violate ase and lo tase. That's, of course, bizarre. But rather, if he violates it, ase and lo tase, he's judged like a regular person. So pshita, obviously, if he doesn't put on tefillin, or if he wears shatnez, not as big, they have a big dekun or something, or eats nevela, obviously he's judged. Saka daita chamena, I would have thought the following. Ho il tunan ein dani lo tashe v'lo tan v'ya shekra v'lo at kohen gadol el pi beitin shel shivim echad. Since I learned in the first parak that the kohen gadol's judgments always happen in front of beitin agadol, v'yamar v'ad abarava, kol adavah gadol yaviyo elacha. Remember, in the first parak we learned the drasha that supported that, which is in Yitro's advice to Moshe. He says, all of the great things or the great matters are brought to you. And the drasha is devarav shel gadol, matters involving the important person, which Melech Kohen Gadol, Ema Kol Dvarav Shel Gadol, I might think anything involving him, goes to the Beit Din HaGadol. We saw this also in the first parak, Kamash Malan, that if he violates Melech HaNyantiv, or if he has a machlok with somebody about a halva, that goes to a regular court. Ema Chinami, why indeed doesn't it go to 71? So Miktiv Divrei Gadol, doesn't say the matters of a Gadol, Hadavar HaGadol, the great matter, meaning Davar Gadol Mamash. So in other words, a Kohen Gadol only rises to the point of needing a Beit Din of 71 if it's a great matter like execution. So he cannot be executed in front of a Beit Din of 23. That's to be judged by a Beit Din of 71. But if it's a regular case involving that would normally take three, then Kohen Gadol has that also. And that's what the Braita meant, Harehu Kenyo L'chol Dvarav, meaning in the context of a violation of Haseh or Lo Taseh. Okay, Me'id u'midinoto, back in the Mishnah said that a Kohen Gadol testifies, and they can testify about him. Me'id, can he really testify? V'hatanya, take a look at this. Or must he testify? Me'id often means, it doesn't just mean that he we accept him as a witness, but that he has an obligation to go testify, such that he's liable, and we can administer Shavuot Ha'edut if he doesn't do it. V'hatanya, we have the famous Braita in the context of Hashavat Aveda that says, should you see the ox or the lamb of your fellow and you think to look away, Vitalamta mehem, say, don't look away, take him. Why does it say it in that way, Vitalamta? We saw this in Bab Metzia, Pamim Shatam Italem, Pamim Shi'atam Italem. Sometimes you're allowed to look away. Right? The Torah words it that way for that reason. Haketzad. Kohen v'betakvorot. Let's say you're a Kohen, and the guy's animals walk around the cemetery, which means you can't go in and get it. Zaken v'nalafikvodo, or you're an elder or a member of the Beit Din or something, and schlepping this animal through the streets is below your dignity. Or you're standing there with another buddy, and you're doing serious work, and he's lolling around. Then, therefore you don't have to do Hashavat Aveda. Let the other guy do it. And so this, we should apply the same thing to Edut, that other people should come and testify. You're a Kohen Gadol. It's not appropriate for you to come to the Beit Din. So Rav Yosef Me'id LaMelech. Rav Yosef said only in a case where the king is on trial. Then you testify. But wait a second. In the next Mishnah, we learned that a Kohen Gadol can't be judged. A Melech can't be judged. If Melech can't be judged, so what is the case where the Kohen Gadol is coming to testify? And we can't testify about the Melech. So Elam Rabbi Zera Me'id Levan Melech. He said, no, okay, come testify about the crown prince. So Ben Melech Hedyot, who are we talking about? He's a regular guy. Ben Melech has no special position in the community. So the Kohen Gadol testifying for him is no different than anybody else. We should apply Vitalamta. Elam Me'id Bifnei HaMelech. It means if the king is present, then the Kohen Gadol will come and testify. We have a rule that we don't put the king on the Sanhedrin. So the answer is, Shumyakor, the Kohen Gadol, Atavyativ. It's a very interesting cycle. The Kohen Gadol knows testimony. So what do? In order to make sure the Kohen Gadol can come and feel comfortable, we put the king temporarily on the Sanhedrin. The Kohen Gadol now comes and testifies. He's comfortable being there because the Melech is present. The Melech has made him comfortable, but the Melech can't be part of the Sanhedrin. So what do? Mekable niale the sadute. We accept his testimony. Kai huva azil ma'inale anan medine. What happens? The Melech gets up and leaves. The Kohen Gadol leaves because he testified. And then we, the rest of us, sit down and we process it out. So in other words, if the Kohen Gadol knows testimony, the way to set it up is we temporarily have the Melech sit as pro tem on the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin then judges the case. Then the Kohen Gadol, who's finished testifying, leaves. The Melech can get up and leave, and the rest of the Sanhedrin then deals with that testimony. Okay, back in the previous statement, we said Gufa ein moshivin melech Sanhedrin. We don't have a king sit on the Sanhedrin. And further in that Braita, velo melech kohen gadol bibur shana. Neither a melech or a kohen gadol can be involved in the din of Iv ibur shana. So melech with Sanhedrin, why don't we have a king sit on the Sanhedrin? Dichtiv lo tane al riv, the pasuk that we saw several times in the first parak, do not respond to a suit, as it were. But the drasha is lo ta'ane al rav. That's because the word riv is written chaser. And so therefore, you could read it lo ta'ane al rav. You don't respond to the great one. Meaning, if the melech says something, you can't disagree with him. Therefore, the melech can't be part of the Sanhedrin. You got to have people on the Sanhedrin that other members of the Sanhedrin can disagree with. Now, lo melech v'kohen gadol bibur shana. Why can a melech nor a kohen gadol be involved in the deliberations of members of the Beit Din for Ibur Shana, because they have a vested interest. Melech Mishum Afsanya, because the king has to pay his army every month. And if they add a month to the year, then that's going to cost him. So he's going to have a vested interest in not being Ma'aber Tashana. Kohen Gadol Mishum Tzinan. The Kohen Gadol has the same problem because he's going to be walking around barefoot and going into the mikveh so many times and changing clothes on Yom Kippur. And if we're Ma'aber Tashana, Yom Kippur will be later in the season and he's going to be colder. So he's going to again have a vested interest in not doing it. So Amar of Papa, Papa says from this, Shvamina Shata Bata Yarcha Azli. So Rav Papa says something that to us is fairly obvious, which is that the year follows the months, meaning that if we have a Shana Mu'uberet, then Tishrei will now be a colder month, because Tishrei will be in what we'll call October instead of September. So Eini, is that really true? V'hana hanach shlosha ro'e bakar dahavu kaimi. There were three herdsmen who were there. Shamina Rabbanan de Kamri, and the rabbis heard them saying the following. Chanamar im bachir v'lakish kachada yinatz. Dein hu adar. Which means that if the early stuff that grows and the later stuff that grows are both blossoming, then that truly is the real Adar. That's what they heard. The rabbis heard these herdsmen saying it. Vim lav, late dein adar. And if not, then this is not the real Adar. In other words, this is now later in the season. Chanamar im tor bitzfar bitla gimut. So then they heard another guy saying, and there's another siman of saying this is really the proper season for Adar. He says, if the shore is very cold in the morning, so that the ox would die of snow. It's kind of an aphorism. But in the afternoon of a tihara, he would sleep underneath the tree, and he would then rub his pelt against it because he's hot, then that's really Adar. In other words, in Nisan it's hot all the time, and Shvat it's cold all the time. Adar is the season when it's cold in the morning but warm in the afternoon. And V'chanamar, and the third one said, V'imla v'leitan Adar, V'chanamar im kidum takif l'chada yehei, yipach below ach nafik lekiv ledenu adar vim lav late den adar. So the third one said that if the eastern, a very strong eastern wind is, if you have a strong eastern wind, and nonetheless, the wind, the air that you exhale, comes out and kind of pushes it away, then that's adar. And if not, then not. And then what happened is that in that particular year, there were no such simanim. In other words, they were saying this in, let's say, February. And they said, if you see these kind of things, they overheard them saying these sort of things, then it's really the Adar, if not, not. And what happened is none of those things were happening. The wind was stronger and it was colder, and the late blossoming things were not blossoming yet. Vibru'a banu mahashiye shaita. And the rabbis were ma'aber tashana, means the rabbis added another month to that year. In other words, that the season does not really bring with it the simanim, but it's really calling it Adar that's going to do that, which is very strange. So the answer is v'tisbara v'ata samuch. But think about it. That story doesn't make sense, because do you think the rabbis are really relying on these shepherds, on these herdsmen? Ella Rabbanan Chushbenayu Samuch, they had their own calculation, and that's why they made the Ibur Shana. And we went through a long sugi of that in the middle of the first parak. For Oy Bakar, Ista Yehudim, Ista Yemil Tayu. It just happened to be that what they said coincided with the statement. And so, it was a coincidence that, that these statements were made around the orientation of the year. Okay. Choleitz v'choltzin. We said that a Kohen Gadol gives chalitza, we give chalitza to his wife, he dies, and but he does not do yibum. Now, kapasik v'tani lo shtamina yirusin v'lo shtamina suin. The Mishnah did not distinguish. It made it one fiat, which is that whether or not the Kohen Gadol's brother was betrothed or married to that girl, nonetheless, the Kohen Gadol does not do yibum. The reason I understand that a Kohen Gadol does not do Yibum if his brother was actually married, because there's an Aseh of Betula and a Lotaseh of Almana. Because after all, if she was already married to his brother, she already had Biyah with him, and she's not a Betula. Ve'ein Aseh, the Aseh of Yibum is Docha Lotaseh V'Aseh. This we dealt with in the first parak of Yevamot. And the aseiv yibum cannot be docha the love of almana along with the aseiv betula. Elamina erusin, but if she was only betrothed, then amai yavo aseiv yidchelot asei. Why should he not do yibum with the kohen gadol do yibum with his dead brother's fiance? Because after all, the aseiv yibum should be docha the lot aseiv of almana, and there's no corresponding aseiv betula because she wasn't married yet. The answer is gzera b'rishona to be yoshniyan. It's the same reason that a regular kohen does not do yibum with a grusha or even a chalutza. The reason that a man does not do yibum with a mamzeret if his brother married a mamzeret, because even though that first bia really would be aseh dochalot aseh, but the second bia wouldn't be. The first bia is the bia of mitzvah, and therefore the kohen gadol we can't allow him because of bia shnia. Tanya riachi im kidmuk ba'alu bia rishona kanu v'asol kaman bia shnia. If any of these lot aseh, the people who have a relationship that's involved in a lav, go ahead and do yibum, the yibum is now valid, and now instead of chalitza they have to give a get, but you're not allowed to stay married because of bia shnia, and do have to give the get. Okay, the end of the Mishnah said that if a Kohen Gadol has a relative die, then the Machloket, Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Meir said he leaves the Mikdash and follows sort of in a duck and weave fashion so that at no point is he present when the beer is there. And Rabbi Yehuda says he doesn't leave at all. Tana Rabbanan, Umina Mikdash Lo Yitzei, Rabbi Meir says Lo Yitzei Imahen, he doesn't go with them. Aval Yotzeihu Achareihen, he follows from a distance. Keitzad, Nechsin V'Niglein, Niglein V'Hunechseh. That's exactly like the Mishnah said. Yotzeh petach shara ir. That's Rameir. Now, Shapir kam Rabbi Yehuda. The fact is, Rabbi Yehuda's response to Rameir is good. He said, Amino Mikdash lo yitzeh. So how does Rameir answer that? So Malach Rameir, this is what he would answer. Ihachi leveto namilo. According to you, Rabbi Yehuda, he should never leave his house and leave the Beit HaMikdash. He can't ever leave. Mikdash lo yitzeh, if you read that literally, that means the minute he's Kohen Gadol, he's sequestered there forever. And we know that he goes to his house. We know that from the description in Yoma. We just know from regular life. A Kohen Gadol just has a quasi-normal life. Halachi kamar. This is what Rameir said back. Mikdash lo yitzeh means mikdushato lo yitzeh. Because the Torah says that in the context of the distinction between a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hediot relative to his dead relatives and going to the funeral. A Kohen is mitameh, laviv, ulimo, etc., but according to Domina Mikdash lo yitzeh, the way you interpret it is min mikdushato lo yitzeh. He should never violate his sanctity for anybody, of course, with the one famous exception of mit mitzvah. The kaiman de la hakera, so Rameir says, since he's acting in such a strange fashion, they're walking and he's standing behind the wall, they go behind the wall and he walks, etc. Lo ati the min guy, he's not going to touch the dead body. Everybody's recognizing this distinction here. And therefore it won't happen. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Aga merare dilma mikri va'ati v'naga." Maybe because he's so bitter, he'll forget about what's going on. He's so upset because of the death, and he will touch the body. So therefore, we are concerned. All right. The rest of the Mishnah said, "Shu menachem." So when he comforts others, and we have the whole system there. Tana Rabbanan, kishu over bashura l'nachem et achirim. When he walks through the line to menachem others, which we're going to see what that means. Sgan, his sgan means the second into the Kohen Gadol. Mashuach she'avar means if there was a Kohen who was nimshach to be Kohen Gadol, let's say as replacement of Yom Kippur, and now he is in limbo, or he's the retired Kohen Gadol. Then he and the assistant walk on his right side. V'rosh Beit Av, the head of the Beit Din, v'avelim, and the mourners, v'chol ha'am mismalo, they're on his left side. Uchshuhu omed b'shura, when he's standing in the row, u'mitnachem yachim, this sounds different than our practice, because our practice, in most of our kehilot, except for the temanim, is that the avelim walk through and the menachemim stand still. Here you see the opposite. When he's standing still as a person getting comforted, sgan mimino, the assistant is to his right side, it's all part of the protocol, rosh beitav, v'cholam yismalo, and the head of the beit din, and all of the people who are passing by are on his left, of Mashuach Shavar, notice who's missing from this picture. When he is giving comfort, we have his emeritus with him. But when he is being comforted, Mashuach Shavar lo ati gabe, the old Kohen Gadol doesn't come to him. Why? My taima, chal shadate, he might become very upset. Savar kachadibi, that they're laughing at me, of the fact that he's now the focus of attention, laughing at me that I'm kind of the old Kohen Gadol put out to pasture. So we don't have him be there. When he's comforting, he can come along as assistant. Amar Papa, Shmamina Mihamat Nitalfat. From this Braita, we can infer three things. Shmamina, first of all, Hainu Skan, Hainu Mamuna. That Skan and Mamuna mean the same thing, because Mamuna in the Mishnah and Skan here played the same role, being on his right side. Ushmamina, Avelim Omdin V'chol Amovrim. We also hear that the proper practice is for the Avelim to stand still and the comforters to pass by. Ushmamina, Avelim L'smol HaMenachamin Hein Omdin. That the mourners are always to the left of those who comfort, as you described here. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Bershanayu Avelim Omdin. The original practice was, as we saw, that the Avelim stand still, V'chol Am Ovrin, and everybody passes them. And let's now find out why our practice, again, in almost all kilot, is the opposite of that, where the Avelim walk through. Hayush Temishpachot Rishalayim. There were two families in Rishalayim, Mitgarot Zubazu. They had a big fight. Zotomeret Ani Overet Chila, Vizotomeret Ani Overet Chila. They had a death in the family, each of them, at the same time. So each family said, I'm going to go first. Hitkinoshe Amomdin Vavilim Ovrim. So they made a new rule, which is, sorry, there were two families who came to comfort, and each family said, we're going to come first. And it became a big fight. So the rabbis changed the rule, and they said that everybody stands still, where you stand, wherever you are, and the Avelim walk through. Okay. Amar Rabbi Bar Abba, Hechzir Rabbi Yossi to the Varli Yoshno B'Tzipori. In Tzipori, Rabbi Yossi, who is the Rabbi Tzipori, put it back to the proper way. Shu Avelim Omdin V'chol Am Ovrim. That's the way it should be. The Avelim are standing still, and the people are walking past. And that's something that could be accomplished because he told the families to just stop fighting, or there were no families like that there, or whatever it might be. We hear another takon of Rabbi Yossi in Tzipori. Not to have a woman walking in the shuk and having her kid, a little baby, trailing behind her. So Rashi fills it in that there was a story that there was a woman who was walking like that and some lowlifes grabbed the kid, kidnapped the kid, and told the woman that unless she agrees to have beer with them, they won't let the kid go, and it became obviously a tragedy. And so they made this rule that you've got to keep your kid close to you and not allow things like that to happen. That if women are in a privy, they should talk to each other. And if one of them should stand outside, or if they're next to each other, they should talk to each other, because people will hear them talking, and if a man comes, he'll know that there are women there, he'll stay away. If he doesn't know that, he might walk in and end up being alone with a woman in a compromised position, and what may happen. Menashe bar Aza, bar Avat, she'ili tet Rabbi Yoshia Rabba b'veit almin dehutzal. We go back to the issues of comforting mourners. I asked Rabbi Yoshia at the cemetery in Hutzal, which is an important town in Bavel, V'amarli in shura p'chuta me'asura b'nei adam. A shura needs at least 10 people. V'ein avilim min aminyan. This goes back to the sugyan ketubot. Avilim do not count towards those 10. You need 10 comforters. Whether either practice of who's walking and who's standing, right, you need to have 10. Kishuhumi nachem. The end of the Mishnah said that when the Kohen Gadol gets nechama from others, then they say anu kaparatcha, etc. Ibayelu ki menachem hu achrini hechi amarlu. What does he say when he comforts others? When they comfort him, they say anu kaparatcha. He says back to Baruch Hu Hashemayim. Toshma v'hu omer titnachamu. He says, you be comforted. Now, hechidami, ilem ekim nachami achrini didei. That's when other people comfort him. Amalu iu titnachamu. He says to them, you should be comforted. Nachasha karami lehu. He's like throwing a curse at them. That you'll soon be mourning and you'll be comforted. Ella kim nachem lachrini amalu titnachamu. So now we know that's what he says when he comforts others. Titnachamu. And when they comfort him, they say, anu kaparatcha. And he says, titparchu. Shma minam. Okay, that's the end of the analysis of the first Mishnah. As I mentioned, in the next podcast, we are going to go back and look at the second Mishnah about the Melech, and then go straight to this Gemara on Daf Yutet and pick it up at this point. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.